Our scripture this morning will be taken from Ecclesiastes, and it will be chapter 3, and we're going to be reading the first 13 verses of that. Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 13. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to rend and a time to sow, a time to keep silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. What profit has he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of man to be exercised in it. He hath made everything beautiful in his time. Also, he has set the world in their heart, so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good and all his labor. It is the gift of God.
Good morning. Especially appreciate Jim reading that passage. He and I especially struggle with that bit about time to speak and a time to keep silence. Neither one of us ever knows which one it is, Jim. I hate to pick on Jim, but it couldn't happen to a nicer fellow. This morning I thought it might be appropriate to have a sermon engineered for fall weather. I don't know if fall's going to cooperate or not, but it's the time of year where things begin to change, and if we're wise, we pay attention and learn something from it. In Oklahoma, we have a strange relationship with fall. I remember in my years at the University of Oklahoma in Norman, we had a lot of out-of-state students who would spend their first fall on campus. And I remember days where they'd come out in the middle of November and it'd be 85 degrees outside, and they'd say, "What is this?" And we'd say, "This is second summer." And second fall is coming, followed by first and second winter, and then allergy season. And all of that just kind of runs together for us, and you never know which one is which. But we do know the idea that seasons come and go, and so it is in human life. Shakespeare was one who recognized this. "All the world's a stage," he wrote, "and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts. He acts between seven ages." But long before Shakespeare ever said anything quite so clever, it was the man that Israel knew as Qohelet, the teacher, Solomon, the wise man of Israel, who wrote the passage that will be this morning's text in Ecclesiastes, the third chapter, beginning in verse 1. "For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven." There is simply no such thing as normal life. I'm a big fan of the Western movie Tombstone. It's kind of violent. Don't show it to your kids. But there's a great scene towards the end of that where Doc Holliday is on his deathbed, and Wyatt Earp comes to him, and they're talking about what they're going to do with life. And Doc Holliday, Val Kilmer does a great job. Doc Holliday says, Wyatt Earp first says, "You know, I just want to live a normal life." And Doc Holliday says, "There is no normal life, Wyatt. There's just life, right? It's just what it is. You never get to normal. And if you're looking for normal, you never arrive. And in fact, you find that you're never satisfied with what you have because things change. And such are the seasons of life. There is no normal. There is no ordinary." A lot of us, we're having a class down the hall with the young families talking about some of the modern debates and issues related to gender and gender identity and some of the challenges that our children in schools especially are trying to wrestle with. And one of the things we keep mentioning, well, sometimes we just say it's a strange time to be alive, but the other thing we mention is it's always a strange time to be alive. Every generation has thought that the struggles it faced where the cataclysmic, world-altering changes of all human history, only to be followed by the next set of cataclysmic, world-altering changes of human history. There is no normal and there is no ordinary. There's one after the next, and so it goes. There are only seasons and times. And either we trust that God has all of those in his hands, or we do not. Poetically, then, the writer of Ecclesiastes recites for us a familiar poem. It almost sounds like you could sing it. I asked Jim to sing it. He wouldn't do it. Beginning in verses 2 through 8, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Everyone who reads those knows that we like some of them better than others. In fact, some of us would like to think that the goal of life is simply to construct a series of seasons of all of the good ones. In fact, we even call it that. These are the good ones, and those are the bad ones. But you notice the ancient wisdom contained here doesn't tell it like that. It just says these are the seasons. Which ones are the better? Tell me, which one is better, summer or fall or winter or spring? I mean, you've got your favorite, and mine's right, by the way. It's fall, just in case you're curious. That's the good one. But everybody likes something about every other one of them, and everyone has a favorite. Some of you are winter people and love that new fallen snow and the scent of a fireplace burning. And some of you are spring people, and you like gardening and hay fever and allergies. I don't know what's wrong with you, but you like it. Some of you are summer people who like the lake and time outside when it's warm, and you like a good sunburn. And then some of you like fall because you're, you know, good human beings. Everybody has different opinions on all those, but which one's the good one? You know, each one of them does something valuable for us, and each one of us benefits from passing through those seasons of life. The same way it is in our lives. There are simply different times. It is appropriate sometimes to lament in the same way it is appropriate sometimes to experience joy. I don't know when we got it in our head that one was better than the other or that neither were good. Sometimes we try to be stoics with no emotions at all and say, well, I don't want to go too far this way or that way. Some of us say joy is the good one and never cry. The Bible says both of them happen. I'm kind of a snob about funerals, but I get aggravated when someone preaches a funeral and says, let's not cry today because, hey, look, I know we have hope as a Christian, but when you lose a loved one, it's all right to cry. It's appropriate. There is a time to lament. Christians grieve differently. Paul says you're not supposed to grieve as those that have no hope. But that doesn't mean not to grieve. There's such a thing as hopeful lament. There's such a thing as hope and lament. And there are other times where it's appropriate to celebrate. When something good happens, be excited about it. It's wonderful. It's the way it's supposed to be. And you appreciate each in their season. There are seasons of beginnings and endings. Most of us would like kind of an even keel where you kind of start something and it just goes, right? Most of us are creatures of habit. I can be that way. I think we all can. Where we like things to be the same day in and day out. I like the same flavor of coffee if I can arrange for it. I like everything to be in its place. But it doesn't work that way. About the time they start carrying a brand of coffee I like at Walmart, they get rid of it and replace it with something else, and I have to try out new things. And so it goes. This is the way of life, and it's the way of all things. There are seasons of peace and of conflict. Now, that one should be obvious, right? Isn't peace the better one? I would say maybe not. They both have a role. You know, conflict can be healthy. Sometimes when you pull out difficult issues and talk about them and argue and fight about them, the result is something better. The result is that you get to build on something and recognize a wound that you've been overlooking before, and actually something comes out of the struggle that is a benefit to you. It's painful and unpleasant, and I don't guess anybody's ever going to like it, but that doesn't mean it's not good. You know, good things can hurt. Have you ever been to the dentist? Sometimes good things hurt, and you got to do it. And so it is, there are days of peace and there are days of conflict, and each has its own purpose. Kohelet, the writer Solomon, doesn't leave us there, though. And if you stop in verse 8, you have a nice sermon, and it's all well and good, and everyone would probably be thrilled if I stopped there, but, you know, I never do. That's not actually his point. Verses 2 through 8 is not actually the point that Solomon is making. In fact, in that section, if you want my 2 cents on it, he's actually quoting somebody else. I think, Ben's opinion, this was a well-known set of sayings, a poem that people knew and recited. And Solomon says, yeah, we know this, right? Everyone's heard this. Your mother's taught you this. Your father's taught you this. There's a time for this and a time for that. They heard the song on the radio. They knew how it went. They understood that. But what Solomon does, which is so unique in Ecclesiastes, is he takes something you know, and then he asks a hard question about it. And that's what happens in verse 9. What gain has the worker from his toil? That's the question. What's he asking? He says, I know what we've been told, and I'll tell you, if Solomon is the author of this text, I think he is, and if Solomon is late in life, and I think he is, then he had experienced every one of these seasons and its time probably more often than he wanted. His question is, not is it true, his question is, what are we supposed to do about that? If every time you get somewhere in life, something changes, what's the point of doing anything? Isn't the goal to kind of reach that plateau and say, there it is, we arrived, mission accomplished, and then rest under your tree and enjoy the days to come? I mean, that's kind of the bill of goods we've been sold in American life, by the way. You work really hard, retire early if you do a good job, and then you get a rocking chair or something, I don't know. But like there's something you kind of plateau, and that's the goal. Solomon says if everything changes, if there's no normal, if we never know when it's the good old days, what is the point of all this work? Don't I know that I could work and work and work and work and lose everything? Don't I know that some people don't do anything at all and get everything? Don't I know that it never works out the way I think, that all my plans come to nothing, that seasons change and come and go in the Lord's own discretion and I have no say over it? Solomon is the wisest, most powerful, wealthiest, most influential man of his age, and he says, I have no control over what my labor brings about. It's like weather. It just happens. So what good is it? The efforts of my toil. Why do we bother? Thankfully, he gives us something of an answer. It's a difficult answer, but it's an answer in verses 10 and 11. I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. One thing we learn about God in the Bible that I don't entirely understand, but just seems to be true, so just take it and deal with it. God seems to love becoming more than being. What I mean by that is that he made creatures that grow. He made creatures that start out as infants and grow and change their entire lives. He made beings that are never the same from one day to the next. You can ask a chemist or a biologist, right down to the cells in your body. Everything about you is changing on a regular basis. I looked back the other day, the church at Broken Arrow, I've done lessons on their summer series for several years running. I didn't do it this summer, but several years in the past. And they have a video camera, and they record them, kind of like we started doing. But they've done it several years now. So I went back, and I was just kind of curious, and I looked at about 5 years of my summer series lesson, just the first minute or so, at Broken Arrow. Would you believe my hair wasn't always this gray? But you can see, like, year by year, how much you have aged me here at the Glenpool Church of Christ. Or maybe it's kids, I don't know. But you see that, and things change. And that's the way God made us. God made us to change. And not always in ways that are appreciably better. God apparently has made us to age and get old. And apparently there's something beautiful about that too. Gray hair is the crown of glory of old age. Even if it falls out like Devin, it's something that's beautiful and wonderful. See, you smiled, so I picked on you. That's something that happens, and it's part of who we are, and it's the way God made us. God seems to see becoming and change and growth more beautiful than holding still. And that's the other word I'd mention in this text. Everything beautiful in its time. That there is an appropriateness to each season of life. You know what kids are supposed to be? Kids are supposed to be kids. You know what grown-ups are supposed to be? By the way, in case you didn't know, here's today's preaching part. Grown-ups are supposed to act like grown-ups, right? It's inappropriate when children are asked to act like grown-ups way ahead of their time. And it's inappropriate when adults act like kids well past the time of growing up. There's an appropriateness to each season of life, and each one of them is beautiful. And God asks us to recognize what He sees. And He apparently sees it because He made it that way. And He wants us to take a look and say, what is it that I have right now in front of me that is beautiful? And what can I do with that in its own time? Because it won't always be here. Humans have to learn to appreciate the moments more than desperately seeking to master the outcomes. If we've noticed something about human life, it's that every one of us thinks we control the end of the story. And if we just play our cards right and work the system a little bit, one of these days, I'll get the good old days. One of these days, my best days are ahead, and I'm going to put up with things now I don't like, but one of these days, it's all going to be better. And that's not going to work. Neither is it going to work to say everything's good the way it is right now and it'll never change. What humans and especially Christians are called upon to do is to say, what's going on right now? What is God doing in the world, in my life, at this moment? And how can I recognize its beauty? Jesus would say, sufficient for the day is the evil thereof. You got plenty of problems today without trying to manipulate the future. It's not in your control anyway. How can you be the best person, the most faithful Christian you can be at this season in your life? Because as soon as you grab onto it, it seems to disappear. He goes on to say at the end of verse 11 something that I find beautiful and disturbing. He has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. It's really hard to be self-aware. When were the good old days? You know, there's a reason they call them the good old days. Because it's always in retrospect that you say, that's when things were perfect. But you don't know them until they're gone, for some reason. Because we don't stop and appreciate what we have. We do not understand the passing of seasons. And we don't understand the consequences of our works. Every farmer that plants a seed has hope that God does something with it, but we don't actually know how it works out. Things change. Instead, we need someone else to chart a course for us because we simply do not know how to navigate the strangeness of life. God has given us a sense, and that's the language there. He has put a little eternity in our heart. Human beings aren't like dogs, right? I'll be real honest with you. I don't think dogs have 401ks. I don't think dogs make retirement plans. I don't think dogs worry about the things we worry about. So God has made us a little better than that. He said, I'm going to give you a taste of the big picture. He gives us a memory, a sense of history, a sense of hope for the future. He gives us the ability to look ahead and plan and have forethought. And He does all of that, but that doesn't make us omniscient. He doesn't say, in fact, you can plan it all out perfectly and know everything. He says, not the beginnings and the ends. You don't get the whole picture. You get something. And you get to do what you can with that. And that's all that we've ever been given. And we trust the rest to Him. And so in verse 12 and 13, He gives us the closest that you're going to get from Solomon to an answer to the riddle of life's changing seasons. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before him. That which is already has been, that which is to be already has been, and God seeks what has been driven away. Your job is not to master time and history and the universe. Your job is not to manipulate the forces of the cosmos to be whatever it is you want it to be. Our job is to accept the seasons of life with trust and know that there is something good to be done with whatever we've been given. Our job is to be busy in every season with the business of God. Our job is to rejoice and be counted worthy of the work God has given to us in every season of life. Whether they change or stay the same, we look for the goodness of God. That is God's gift to man. That there has never been a time in your life when you cannot find the work of God to be done. There has never been a time in your life, and there will never be a time in your life when there is not an opportunity for faithful service and glory to be brought to God. It may be that today is the beginning of your season of faithfulness in Christ Jesus. And if you would put on Christ today in baptism and begin a life in his name, we're going to stand and sing a word of encouragement, and you may come at this time.